$21.6 million in extra profit is what we were able to add in one single quarter in one of our portfolio companies by implementing a sales team. And we went from zero sales guys to 40 sales guys in 120 days. And so I want to walk you through the process so that you can apply this to your business. But before I explain the $21.6 million increase, let me kind of give you some context on this business and where it was in the life cycle. We brought in mercenaries. So when I say mercenaries, I mean an outsourced sales team. The founder of the business had never been in sales at all. He'd never got on the phone, he'd never done door-to-door, he'd never done anything related to getting a stranger to give him money one-on-one. I thought it was too risky to try and have somebody who's completely new to it try and start from scratch. And so I called somebody in my network and I said, hey, do you wanna make a bunch of money? And he said, yes. Can you round up some of your guys and start taking calls for this company that I have? And so they started taking sales and we started making more money. We have a W. Money up, W, fantastic. And in a second, I'll walk you through all the statistics of what the mercenaries and the outhouse team did, which then led us to a fully in-house team. Now, as you can imagine, going from zero sales guys to 40 sales guys in a fresh company is hard. But let me explain some of the problems with the mercenaries and then I'll walk you through the actual stats. So there were three main problems with the mercenaries. All right, problem number one is that we were giving them 20% of the revenue. All right, now this is something that I was vehemently against, to be very honest with you. In this particular company, I was in a minority position. I said, it's ultimately your call. I was like, but I would not do it at this percentage. They decided to move forward with it anyways, and hey, we made money, there was a W there. But it was a problem. 20% of revenue coming in is a big fucking check. The sales team company was arguing we can't get the top guys to sell unless we give them a really big rip. That's sales slang, big commission. So we had to give them 20% of the revenue that they collected as commission to the mercenaries team, the outhouse sales team. The second problem that came up is related to performance. They were getting less than 30% of people to ascend, meaning people who buy the first thing to buy the next thing. And we wanted it to be higher than that, or I believe that it should be higher than that. We're paying a lot, and we're not getting as much out as we want. The third problem with the outhouse sales team, and this is one that I think more long-term about because I'm an investor in the business, is the sellability and enterprise value of the business. Meaning, in the future, we'd like to sell the company at some point, probably. And even if you don't wanna sell a business, creating a sellable business still makes the business more valuable. And so, if you can make a business more valuable to a stranger, it also becomes more valuable to you. If you have an outsourced sales team, something that exists outside of the business that's responsible for 20, 30, 40% of the revenue in the business, then that could be a material issue. That's why we decided to look at these three things and say, all right, let's see if we can move this in-house. I'm gonna walk you through first the funnel, kind of before and after, and then I'll walk you through the process that we did to fix it or swap it over. That resulted in the $21.6 million increase in profit, not revenue, profit. The way that this process was structured is we had a two call setup. We've got a percentage of people who schedule a call, a percentage of people who show to the call, and then schedule the next thing. Then they have to show to the next thing, and they go to the next call, and then do they buy? So let me walk you through the stats here. Because everyone who bought the product had a first call that they wanted to attend, 100% of people were scheduled to show up for this call. With the outsourced sales team, we had 74% of people who were actually showing for the call. Once they got on the call, we were able to get 53% to schedule the follow-up call. And so some people call this a qualification call, which is if you're going to sell something else, you wanna make sure the person actually fits for the thing you sell. Makes sense, right? You wanna make sure they have the problem to solve and the money to spend. With the 53%, the outsource team wanted to only give their closers, because he's trying to optimize for his dollars per hour for his team, only the easiest closes. So they weren't willing to take calls they weren't already sure were going to close. All right, so because of that, they're only passing 53%, or almost half, to the next call. Now again, this is just scheduling. Now from here, we had 63% showing up to call two. So this is call one, this is call two. Now this is the close call. This is the set call, this is the close. So I'll just put set, this is close. So the last box we gotta fill in here is how many people were they actually selling? All right, and they were getting 80% of people who showed to the second call, the close call, to buy. All right, and so that is where money came out the other side. Hooray. So let's walk through the math as if 100 people bought the product. So if 100 people bought the product, then it means that we'd have 74% of 100, 74 people who would show up to this first call. Now, of the 74 people, 53%, so about 37 of them, would then schedule for the second call. Of the 37 people who scheduled for the second call, we're gonna have 22, so 63%, 22 of them are actually gonna show up to this close call. Now, 80% of these 22 are going to close, which means we'd have about 20 sales, or 20% of that front end that ascends. Now remember, I said at the very beginning, one of the problems is that we wanted it to be closer to 30. This is the issue. And so I wanna be very clear. A big part of this was the price point we were selling at and the fact that we were selling people who are already customers. We're not selling cold traffic here. We're selling people who already bought this, already demonstrated an interest, and we're saying, do you want more help with that thing? So we thought it should be much higher. So there's five steps that we broke down that we had to do to go from out-of-house team, mercenaries, to in-house sales team. And the first one started with hiring a director. Now, right off the bat, let me explain our thinking process before I explain who we were looking for and how we found them. Because listen, you don't wanna hire 40 people, right? You were thinking, okay, I wanna hire one person who can then hire 40 people, times a lot more circles, right? It's even long to write it out, all right? It's an old investor saying, which is hire one to hire 10. We're gonna hire the one person, not the 40. That's the main decision. After that, what we're looking for is who are we looking for, what do they look like, and then how are we gonna find them? Okay, now from a who perspective, we wanted someone who had been there, done that. Which means specifically somebody who sold this type of product in this type of industry and ideally scaled a big team and knows how to coach up new salespeople. So that's what been there means for us for this particular role. The next thing is you want the person to be metrics driven. So one of the easiest ways that you can measure someone's proficiency in any skill, so this is a little pro tip, the quality and quantity of metrics that someone explains about how they do their job is directly correlated with how good they are at the job. And so if someone's like, hey, I'm an amazing HR person. And I say, cool, what metrics do you track? And they're like, well, the happiness of the team. And I'd be like, what else do you track? How many complaints I get on payroll? I'd be like, okay, what else do you track? The order that they tell me the metrics they're looking at and what they track is gonna tell me what they care about, what they pay attention to, and their level of expertise. Now on the flip side, if someone says, hey, I like to take companies from on average a 45-day time to fill to 20-day time to fill, because we know that every day that a company doesn't have something they need, they're losing money, there's opportunity cost of revenue they should be making by not having them. This is really interesting because they're connecting their metrics to the company's revenue. And so how people talk about the metrics and which metrics they track and how they connect those with how it makes the company more money will show you how good they are at what they do. The third one is just kind of the, I would say, demeanor. Now, I've hired a lot of salespeople and sales directors in my life, and the personality of a sales leader is usually not the same as the personality of a sales killer. Now, there are some superstars who can do both, but it's rarer. Oftentimes, the demeanor of sales directors is a little bit more even-keeled, usually more humble, very servant-oriented. They have to be people. They have to be the type of person who wants to pour into the team and loves watching someone improve their skill set and can repeat the same directions over and over and over again without losing enthusiasm. That's who you want. You want somebody who's like a energizer bunny of positive vibes, because for the most part, sales director is just performance management. They manage the culture of the team. Like, the output of the entire team is the direct function of the sales director. And so if you think about this like on a football team or something, you can switch the coaches and all of a sudden the whole team does way better. It's because the coach drives the culture in the team that drives the performance and the output. And so that is what they're responsible for. And so if they don't have values, everything else that comes from the team is gonna be a diluted version of them. Now we go to the how. You're like, okay, well that sounds like an amazing unicorn, Alex. How do you find that person who's gonna replace this? Well, I personally have a relatively large network of salespeople. And so one of the big things here is that you can either, this is the core four, by the way, you can do outreach, which means you reach out to strangers who you think might fit the role. You can run ads. So you run ads to go get more people. Content, you could also do recruiter. I've used all of these, all right? So there's pros and cons to each of them. But what I will do is I'm gonna cross out two of these early for most of you. Most people think that you can run ads for these types of roles. The reality is usually no. The higher the role is, the better the person is, the less likely they're gonna respond to an ad. Because think about it, an amazing sales director is always going to have a job and always gonna be making good money. Now they might not like their job as much as they could, but they're gonna keep making money. And sales directors tend to be money-oriented in general. And so they're gonna keep making money. So ads is probably not the way to get them. Content, unless you have a salesperson audience, probably not gonna be the way. You can always try it, it's free, give it a shot. But I wouldn't say I'm gonna bet the farm on this. So it's probably not gonna be content. And so usually you're gonna do one of these two, which is you're gonna get a recruiter to do it or you do it yourself. But guess what a recruiter does? They do outreach too. I know this is gonna sound crazy. You message them and you say, hey, I've got this role and it looks like you're perfect for it. Could I tell you about it? Or if you wanna be a little less direct, you can say, you're an amazing person who'd be a fit for this role. Do you know anybody else like you? They're gonna be like, screw everybody else. Talk to me. Alex, how many people do I reach out to? Five? Five? No one's even gonna read it if you message five people. 10? No one's gonna read it if you message 10 people. Reach out to 100 to 1,000 people. And if you get to that 1% on the 100 and you haven't found it, then you might have to go 1% on 1,000. And that's okay, because remember, would you rather have a top 1% sales director? I sure as shit would. So it's okay to turn down the first guy you talk to just because he has a pulse and has one of these things. It's like, okay, this guy talked about metrics, but he was a dick. And he actually doesn't have the experience that I'm looking for. Well then, don't hire him. The thing is it's tough to do that when you're an entrepreneur because you're like, I'm bleeding every day, the house is on fire, I need this role. But I promise you, it's way more painful to hire the person, onboard them, spend 2 months getting them up, then they start hiring shitheads because they're a shithead. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I hate this whole team. And so even if you do get rid of the top, you then have all the stuff they brought in underneath. And so you have to clean house and it's really, really painful. And so as much as you hire one to hire 10, if you fire one, sometimes you have to fire 10, and that sucks. And so getting this hire right is super important, but it's also why we spend more time on it. So now that we hired our in-house sales director, we want to rebuild the compensation structure, right? Because remember, the 20% wasn't going to fly, because if we just flipped it to 20, we might as well just save the effort, right? So we had to rebuild the incentive structure. The problem that we had right now, if you remember, was that we had the problem, I think it was problem one or problem two, whatever, problem one, problem two, whatever it was. 20% of revenue was going to the outsourced sales team. So we wanted to make sure we were less than that. Our target was sub 10%. And that's usually around what I like to be in. Now, I want to be very clear here. There are things that this depends on. So if you're in a business where the salesman does self-gen, meaning they generate their own leads. So if you're going outbound and you're cold calling or you're door knocking, then these percentages would be shifted because you technically are a cost of acquisition. You're both marketing and sales. You're getting the leads and closing the leads. If you're handing salespeople leads, if you're running ads, you have a media team that then generates leads or prospects for a sales team, then you basically have to split that cost between the marketing team and the sales guys. And so given that, let me explain how I actually think about this. What skills do I need? How rare are those skills? So if I'm feeding softballs to somebody, then I don't need Ken Griffey to hit it out of the park, all right, for Gen Z, Mookie Betts. All right, I don't need Mookie Betts to knock it out of the park because I'm soft tossing, right? Anybody can probably rock it out of the park. That's double A or up because at that level, because it's so much easier. If you have crazy expectations, it's rarer and they have more skills, so you gotta pay more. If it's something that's not a lot of skills and more common, you can pay less. And so I just think, how much would I need to pay to attract the level of salesperson I need? Our goal was to take it from 20% to around 10% or less and rebuild the comp plan. You can think about compensation in two columns, all right? You've got money and not money. All right, this is a very complicated system. I don't wanna get into the specifics, a lot of physics behind this. All right, so you've got the money you give them for closing deals, and then you've got other shit. And so that's recognition, praise, attention, approval, perks, status. If you publicly recognize them, if you have a leaderboard, if you give them more attention, you actually train them more, you give them more skills, you say, hey, attaboy, awesome job, great day today. You say, hey, the guy who closes the most gets to park in the nice parking lot. And then status, like maybe when they close 100 sales, they get a hat with a stripe on it. When they close 1,000 sales, they get two stripes, and so forth. So when you guys come on the team, they're like, fuck, I want one of those hats, right? Sales team six, let's go. There's all these things that you can do to increase the value of the job outside of money. And as much as people, sales guys included, will be like, that doesn't motivate me. Sure as shit does. All right, it totally does. Because it makes your life better. On the money side, there's a couple ways to do this. All right, and so I'm gonna explain how we did it. We've made a lot of different compensation structures. A lot of it depends on, again, the business that's involved. Now, one of the big decisions we made up front was that we were going to comp setters and closers. Now, why is that so important? The funnel is throughput. If I can increase my show up rate by 20%, it's just as good as increasing my closer by 20%. It makes no difference to the business. They were just as equally weighted in terms of their value. But again, how rare are the skills and what skills are required? It's easier to set than it is to close. Just as important, but easier. Setters and closers, equally important, but rarer to find a skill from closers, so they got paid a little bit more. But setters still got commissions as well to incentivize the fact that they would get people to show. Cool. So the way that I prefer to set up compensation structures, people are like, it's a pyramid scheme. No, it's a fucking triangle. Calm down. All right. So the idea that I like to have is that I like WW at the top, which means winners win. All right. Which also means losers lose. That's fine. There's fewer winners than there are losers. What that means is you can have ratchets for compensation, meaning if you close 50%, of the people, I'm just using an arbitrary number, you get to keep your job. If you close 60%, you get attaboys. If you close 70%, your commission goes from 10% to 15%. Ah, 50% increase, not bad. If you close above 80%, you get 25%. Whoa, right? And so it ramps. And so it allows the people who are absolute killers to crush. And then the people who are not, guess what happens down here? Churn. But this is structural churn. This is expected churn. This is part of the game where this type of role, like if you require work ethic, you require practice, you require people to show up early, work late, work weekends, take calls, it requires a certain type of person. And a lot of people aren't cut out for it, which is also why most people don't make multiple six figures a year selling. We fixed the compensation structure. We comp setters and closers. We ramped it so that the best guys would get more than 10%. But we knew that as a team, we averaged around, if you want to know the actual number was, we got the overall, everything all in, fully baked, including the sales director, for 9%. We're feeding them qualified prospects. They're not even prospects, they're customers. We already have their fucking credit card. Like, we just had to say, want more of the thing you just bought. Want more help with that thing so you can get the outcome you just said you wanted. Like, these are not hard sales. And by doing this, we got to move on to step 3. Now that we rebuilt the incentive and comp plan to get the types of sales guys that we want on the team, then we had to rebuild the process. So I'm gonna walk through what we do to improve each of these numbers one by one, because as you're thinking about your business, there is no silver bullet. There's no one thing you're gonna do that's changed this entire process. It's 100 golden babies, and this is how we approach everything in business, and business is a pipeline like this. And so I'm gonna show you what we did, and we did improve every one of these numbers, except for one, but it was okay, and I'll show you why. But remember, 100% of people are automatically booked for this next appointment. All right, and so we wanted to improve this show up rate. And so we improved it to 91%. Ooh, 74, 91, more money good. That's a 21% increase, meaning if we did nothing else, we did nothing else in this entire process, everything else stayed the same, we would have a 20% increase in sales. And most of that would disproportionately drop to the bottom line because we already acquired the customer. So all this additional sales money goes to profit. Big deal. So we did 3 things. The first is that the mercenary team was way too aggressive in their copy. False urgency, false scarcity, people kind of see through it. So that was number one that they did that we fixed. Number two is they were giving people way too much time to book out. I'd say, hey, when do you want to show up for your next call? People would be like, oh, how's 2 weeks from now? And they were like, sure. Our big rule of thumb, despite the fact them trying to push out 5+ days for appointments, is we try to go for same day, next day. And that's because in our history, more people show up the same to next day appointments than 5 days plus from now. And so by just simply making the messaging less aggressive, shortening the time when they can book their next call, and number 3, setting reminders that were actually personalized. So rather than just robo-texts, they're the green ones that everyone fucking hates, right? We'd have the sales guy do a 3-way connection with the setter and say, hey, my name's John, it's nice to meet you, Sarah. Looks like you've got X, Y, and Z that I can reach from your account. Really excited to talk to you tomorrow. I think I can help you with X, Y, and Z. Very simple, but it's a video or a voice memo and they see it from a real person, all right? And they can take a picture or whatever. And those 3 things together, 91%, which is a 21% improvement. So now that we got people to show for that first call, how many of them did we get to schedule the next call, which is basically the close of the set call? You're gonna see some magic happen right here. We had a major improvement. I'm not gonna tell you what it is. I'll tell you how much we improved this one in a second. But we did two things to improve the percentage of people who showed up to set calls who decided to schedule close calls. All right. So number one mistake that they were making in this particular business is that, again, this was an outsourced closing team. And so they were trying to minimize how much unqualified work their closers would get because they so carefully wanted to make sure their closers were happy because they were all mercenaries and they all had to pay them a ton just to show up to work every day. Point being, one, the incentives were misaligned. And so setters, remember we added our setters, had a compensation structure to get people to set. They didn't have that. We did add that. And so what do you know? Our setters got more people to schedule. Wild. I know. The second thing was that they were DQing people on the set call, in my opinion, too early. And so they wouldn't really go through a sale. They would just say, hey, here's the price. Are you down to pay that? If yes, I'll book you a call with John. But by doing that, they were basically not selling. They were just taking orders, which if I just tell you the price and you buy, I don't need you. You're not selling at all. You're just a checkout page that's inefficient that takes 20%. We corrected number one. We aligned the incentives of the setters with the overall business, not the closer. We aligned the setting incentive with the business throughput, which got rid of the DQs that were overly DQing people. And we made sure that when they were talking about the product, we were just more trying to qualify the prospect to make sure they had the problem to solve and the money to spend, not telling them the price of what they would ultimately buy because we haven't sold them yet. We just want to make sure that this is a big enough problem for them and that they seem reasonably able to pay if we present it to them. Our schedule percentage went from, survey says, 53% to 94%. For those keeping track at home, that's a 77% increase. So, forgetting this one, if we kept everything else the same and we only did this, we would have increased sales by 77%, assuming everything else stayed the same. But everything else didn't stay the same. So let me show you the next thing we did, which is we had people show up for the first call. We got 94% to schedule the next call. And now we have what percent of these 94 actually showing? Because hey, maybe you just get everyone to say yes so they get off the phone, but are they actually showing? Believe it or not, and this is gonna sound crazy, the show rate that we had here was actually the same process that we had here. Because believe it or not, if people have a good experience and it's personalized to them, they're more likely to show. And so rather than explain, literally repeat myself, I'm gonna say how we actually got the team to do it. So we did four things. Number one is we started implementing daily training, which means that every day the team would get together and they would role play the scripting to make sure their tone was right, that they were coming off the right way, that they're hitting the main points, make sure that they were framing things properly, adding curiosity, hitting the main pain points that the prospect was gonna have so they could set up the next call. Number two is that we do game tape reviews, which is very simple, but you just watch game tape with the team and you have the person who is in the call critique themselves. So rather than have everybody jump on them, because no one likes that, it's horrible, you just have them say, what are all the things you could have done differently? And then the team says all the things they did well. Because remember, there's always something someone did well. You play the tape, they say all the things they would have done differently, and most people do know when they watch it, which is one of the best ways to learn. And then everyone else says, hey, I think you did a great job here. I think you did a great job here. Bravo, next one up. The third thing is this is why the sales director was so key and why they were the first hire, which is doing one-on-ones. And one-on-ones, you role play. Like, you role play till you're sick in the face. You have to learn how to train people how to speak. Like, that's what the job of the sales manager is, besides managing the culture of the team, is if John's rapport building sucks, guess what sales manager does every time they have a one-on-one with John? They practice rapport building, all right? Which means you follow the script. Nope, say it again. Well, say it again. Try like this. Huh? Like, there you go, change your tone. There it is. Like, we're talking 10, 20, 30 reps on one or two phrases in the script so they get it down. If your salesman is not talking back to you in the script on your one-on-ones, you are literally wasting time. The fourth thing was just end of day reports, which is you just wanna make sure that they know you're tracking what matters. And if there's no tracking throughout the week, no one feels held accountable, it also doesn't give you the opportunity to praise and give attaboys. All right, and so every day, the stats are being tracked in real time and daily leaders, daily winners. All right, so those are the four things we did from here to drive our show rate to 87%, that's a 40% increase. So if we did nothing else, but we just had this one improvement in this process and everything else stayed the same, we would have increased sales by 40%. Not too shabby. If you're following at home, which you should be, We should at this point have a ton more volume that is coming to these closers. Massive improvements, because remember, these are customers. This is why we felt like we could do a lot better. Now hitting the close call. So in order to improve this number to the best degree possible, because remember, we're gonna have more disqualified people here. Remember, we told the setters, send anybody you can, because we wanted to get more at bats, okay? So one, we also added in a VSL, so video sales letter between call one and call two. So people got to have some social proof, they got to see some results, they got to have a better understanding, because in my personal opinion, I don't like salespeople repeating a pitch. I'd rather have someone understand the benefits and then have salesmen resolve concerns and personalize solutions to customers rather than have them say the same 15-minute pitch, because then it sounds robotic and they zone out and so does the prospect. So I like to say, here's all the info, watch that, and then we'll talk about it, okay? So number one is we added that piece in. Number two, we role played a lot on the common objections, and we like to do that before the call. The video sales letter covered some of these common concerns in the video so that the sales guys had a little bit more of an advantage going into the call. And then also in the scripting, we front loaded the obstacles. Before you mention the price, you overcome obstacles. After, it's objections. All right, so if I say, hey, do you think your husband supports you in doing this new thing? Before I say the price, then I've overcome an obstacle. If I say the price and I didn't overcome it, it becomes an objection, which is way harder to close. We call it killing zombies, right? You wanna kill the zombies, you wanna defuse the bombs before you talk about money. And so we front-loaded the script to accommodate those issues that people were losing in the sales. And we focused the script far more on what they were going to experience afterwards rather than the features within the service. Because at the end of the day, they don't care about the features of the service, they care about where they're gonna go, what life's gonna be like afterwards. So sell the vacation, not the plane flight. So we made those changes and we got the close rate. If you're like, wait, 42 is lower than 80. Sure as hell is, great math. If we're doing the percentages here and we have a 21% increase here and a 77% increase here and we have a 40% increase here, so that's 1.2 plus 1.77 plus 1.4, we have far more than a double in terms of how much volume was going there. In fact, we had 3.5 times more volume, but we cut the close rate in half. But 3.5 times 0.5 is more than one, meaning we increased the total throughput of this system. And so the end result of this entire process is we went from closing 20% of that 100 people that buy the product to 32. For a net savings of going from 20% of revenue to 9%. So we paid less than half to get 60% more sales. And as you recall, all additional sales dropped to the bottom line because we'd already acquired the customers. So now that we had our in-house director, we rebuilt the incentive and comp plan and we rebuilt the sales process. Now we wanted to scale. So we had to go from 0 to 40 reps and we had to do it in record time. All right, so number one is that to go get all those people, we went everywhere. All right, so we actually did all the things that I outlined, but we also hired 5 to 6 recruiters right off the bat. We did a ton of outbound ourselves. We hit our whole email list up. We did everything because we had to hire 40 guys. We had to do it in 12 weeks. All right, so number one is we did everywhere. So plus ads, well, actually didn't do ads, it was more content and outbound. All right, so recruiters, content, and outbound is what we did to get all the people in the door. Now, once we had people in the door, we didn't have the sales director interview all these candidates because he just wouldn't literally have the time. He did a final checkoff once the team planned on hiring them. And so we had the manager for the setters do several of the talks with the leads, and we also had the recruiters do a lot of the screening as well so that the sales director could save his time and still keep managing the actual team and training the people who were on the floor making money for the company. All right, so saved directors time. The next thing is, okay, great. So we got a lot of people, we got them hired, but how do we make sure that they're actually good? So we automated the sales training to the greatest degree possible. Now, what does that really mean? It means we made a course that was an internal course on how to sell this thing. And so the nice thing with internal courses, if you don't have them, highly recommend it, because the most expensive thing a business can do is train salespeople. Reason why is because when you take a salesperson and you train them on live prospects, all of the money they don't close is money you lose. And you lose all, like you lose the money that you could have made and you lose the money that you spent to get them there. Very expensive, all right? Especially when, and this happens a lot too, you do all of that only to have them get fired. or leave or burn out or whatever. All right. And so we want them to take as many reps as humanly possible in a fashion where there's no risk to the company, which is why we have them watch tons of game tape footage. They attend all the meetings. They listen to tons of live calls. They go through the course and then they role play. There's one takeaway from this fucking video. It's that you role play with your team and that you get really, really narrow on the things that you want them to improve. And you keep nailing that thing until it's perfect. And then you move to the next thing. There's no point in trying to tell someone to improve six things. Doesn't work. I promise you, it doesn't work. I spent too long doing this. Doesn't work. You say, let's work on the first sentence of the fucking script. Keep doing it again. Try it again. Try it again. Try it again. One more time. Say it lighter. Say it faster. Loop to this one. Got it. Second question, right? That's how you work through a script until they will be able to breathe it in their sleep. Then they can actually be present for the sales call because they don't have to think about the scripting because they already know it. So we recruited the people. We saved the director's time. We automated the internal onboarding. I'm gonna give you a pro tip from me, which is that if someone seems like a dud within 14 days, let them go. Some people think I'm heartless. How could I be so heartless? Because I have other families I have to look out for too. And if we don't keep the sales team profitable, the whole business doesn't work. We give people a shot, we get them through all this stuff, we give them a ton of free training, all right? They actually technically get paid to get trained. And if they're not up to chops, we gotta let them go. But we set that expectation up front. And one more thing, and this is a little pro tip from me, I don't know how to spell that, but no prima donnas, all right? So no special snowflakes, because the thing is even if you have one killer on the team and they don't follow the process, they undermine the entirety of the process and they also kill the culture. And so if one guy does double the sales of everybody else or triple the sales of everyone else, I can almost guarantee 9 times out of 10 in my experience, they actually take those sales out of the organization overall. So one guy does triple and everyone's like, oh, we should be like him. But if you have like a 20-person team and everyone goes down by 10% because of this guy, because the cancer spreads, not worth it. Just cut it out. Keep the system. And now that we have the in-house director, we rebuilt the incentive and comp plan, we rebuilt the sales process, we scaled the sales team, and we stabilized it so that we were consistently beating the other team and doing it for less, then we're able to move on to step 5, which is get rid of outsourced team. So with the outhouse team, we did $7 million in cash collected in Q1. The commission on that was $1.4 million. Remember, 20%. So the company got to profit 5.6, and I'm saying profit loosely, 5.6 the company got to keep after paying the outsourced sales team. This 7% with the in-house sales team became $12 million the next quarter. The commission, because instead of 20%, we went to 9%. So the commission went from 1.4 million on 7 to 1.08 million for 12. Net change here was 12 minus 1, 10.92 million, which created the difference between these two was 5.4 million dollars. And that was just in that quarter. Times 4 for the year, and you get 21.6 million. And so that is how we did that for one of the businesses. And so if you have a sales team, you're starting a sales team, use this, take the pieces that are useful for you, enjoy.